Mitzvah Kuf Peiches 188. Shelo lehisaden beachas mikol ha'arayos. We're starting the mitzvos, the whole series now that we're familiar with. Like I said, of Parshas Achrimos, we lay in at the beginning of Parshas Achrimos on the morning of Yom Kippur, and we lay in the end of Parshas Achrimos on the afternoon of Yom Kippur on Mincha. And the beginning talks about Yom Kippur. The last part of the parasha talks about the prohibitions of the arayos, the prohibited sexual relationships. And this is the general prohibition that precedes the specific forbidden relationships. And the way the Sefer HaChinuch phrases it is very interesting. That he says, not to be misadein with any of the arayos, the forbidden sexual relationships. So what does lehitaden mean? So it's not a very common word. Art scroll, the Shoresh Ayin Dalanun, Adin, we know it means gentle, comfortable, things like that. So it means to make oneself comfortable. And Art scroll translates it as to conduct oneself in an intimate manner. So what exactly does that mean? It doesn't mean the actual sexual relations, because that's going to be discussed separately. This means, in general, not to conduct oneself in an intimate manner. When people might be familiar with this word, by the way, from the Zemer, Ka Echsof on Shabbos. That's one of the more recently written Zemers. It was written by Reb Aaron of Karlin, who was one of the founders of Hasidus, so not too long ago, a couple hundred years ago. And in there, that Zemer, he says that on Shabbos, we want to be L'hisadein be'ahavasecha v'yirasecha. We want to be, this word, misadein, with your love and fear of you, with love of you and fear of you. So we want to become intimate, very close to these types of feelings. So these are the types of feelings that maybe are appropriate when it comes to love and fear of God, but not when it comes to the forbidden types of sexual relationships. Shelo lehisaden beachas mikol ha'arayos. So by the way, I'm going to give you a sneak preview that at the end of this mitzvah, we're going to talk that the Ramban holds that there is no such mitzvah. That the only thing that's usher, deraisa at least, it's not the thing that's usher, is the actual act of intercourse itself, and not conducting oneself in an intimate manner, although most poskim do go in accordance with the way that Sefer HaChinuch presents it, the sheet of the Rambam, that besides the intercourse, that conducting oneself in an intimate manner is in fact an isur deraisa. Shelo lisadim bachas mikol reos, not to do this with any one of the forbidden relationships. Vehein, what are the forbidden sexual relationships? Hein krovos, meaning one's close female relatives, which will be enumerated later on. Ve'eshes ish, and of course a married woman. And a nida, a woman who is menstruating. And it's interesting over here that he does not list. There are other types of relationships which are forbidden, meaning mishkav zachar, which means male homosexual intercourse. And behema, which is having relations with an animal. So even though those are certainly obviously forbidden, he says it doesn't fall under the stam, the purview of arayos, of this is specifically the female prohibited relationships. Again, maybe it's too much of a diuk. Maybe it doesn't mean when he gives us this list to exclude those two, but then again, why does he give us a list at all? He could just say all the forbidden relationships. So that might have implications, which we'll discuss in a few minutes, hopefully, regarding what types of activities are prohibited with these female relationships, as opposed to the other types of sexual relationships that are forbidden. Okay. Afilu below bia kegon chibuk v'nishuk v'chol adomel elu hapulos haros shemamikin bahen bale hazima holchim achrei hevel v'yabalu. So what's an example of conducting oneself in an intimate manner? Hugging and kissing and anything that's for similar to these types of things that are bad, they entrench in you. That the people who conduct themselves in not good ways, in I guess disgusting ways, entrench in themselves, that they go after vanity and they become vain or empty.
They become data what?
They become empty. They become vain. They become nothingness. Meaning that they conduct their lives in a manner that's not holy, but rather just whatever they want and don't have any holiness or any positive value to what they're doing. Shneamar ish ish al kol she'er b'saro lo sikrevu legalos erva. The pasuk tells us each man unto his close relationships, the family of his flesh, literally. She will not even come close to reveal the nakedness. Meaning, Pershu ki'ilu amar losasu shum kirva shu agoremes amaviha adam legalos erva. That this, not only are you not allowed to have actual relations, But you're not allowed to, sikrivu, you're not allowed to come close. You're not supposed to do something that could even be on your way to having actual relation. We have, let's finish actually this paragraph first. Mainly ela shelo yigala, so the pasuk seems only that you shouldn't actually have relations. Minayin shelikra, how do you know that you shouldn't come close? Tamalomar val isha binidas tumasa lo sikrav. There it just says that when a woman, when she's on her menstruating impurity, you shall not come close. It doesn't say anything about legala serva. Ainli ela nida below sikrav of lo sigala. Maybe it's specifically a nida, you're not even allowed to come close and you're not allowed to have relations. Minayin lechol harayos. How do you know that all this forbidden relationships are fall under the purview of you're not allowed to even come close? Tamar lomar lo sikrivu legalos, you shall not come close to uncover. V'sham nemar v'nichrasu enefashos ha'osos, that the people who do this shall be cut off from their people. Shema tomru tomar yihu chayavin kares, ala kreva levad, tamar lomar ha'osos v'la krevo. So you think maybe you're chayav kares, the real main prohibition of arayos is the spiritual excision, which is terrible punishment. Maybe that's even if you hug or kiss a married woman, so you'll be chayav kares. No, it's telling you you're only chayav kares if you actually have relations with her, and not if you simply hug and kiss. So the question is, what exactly are the types of activities that are prohibited? So, for example, we have the Rambam, the way he seems to say it. It's, again, all this stuff, I have to tell you, is very unclear. Again, mostly because it was sort of understood in previous generations, probably, what types of activities were appropriate with arayos, and which types of activities were not appropriate. There was more of a natural modesty toward these type of things, so it's not exactly formulated exactly what's allowed and exactly what's not allowed. The way the Rambam seems to say it, they're presented in the 21st chapter of Hilchos Isurei Bia, which is, again, which is basically stated by the Shach in his commentary to Yoredea, when he's talking about Hilchos Nida, where you're allowed to do your wife when she's a Nida, etc. The way he seems to say it is that you're not allowed to do something which is derech chiba v'taivas bia. Not supposed to do something which leads to having sexual relations, but something that isn't may only be asur. They're abundant. Then he goes on to say later, you're not even supposed to, you know, talk to them too much or, you know, wink at them or something. All these things which the Sefer Chinuch is going to discuss, which she says, she seems to imply that those things are only Aser derabanan, that those aren't obviously the real deraisa prohibition according to the Rambam is to do some things that could be considered perhaps as foreplay. So in other words, hugging and again, but then you have a little bit unclear that nowadays perhaps you have people who greet members even of the other opposite gender, maybe in France or something, where you greet people with kissing, and that's not at all. It's their achiba, you like them, but it's not foreplay. Could not possibly be interpreted as foreplay to something greater. So the question is, that might only be derabanan according to other opinions. That might, in fact, because it falls on maybe chibuk v'nishuk, maybe hugging and kissing is sort of an absolute thing. That's aser deraisa. And then when you be coming to other things which are not exactly clear what their status would be. Let's say you're at you want to get a married woman's attention. So are you allowed to tap her on the shoulder? So the question is, that's for sure not derech chiba. You just need, excuse me, please move over, and you couldn't get her attention any other way for some reason, even by just talking to her. So is that even aser derabanan? These things are very, what?
Sending a hand in greeting.
We'll get to that in a second. So that's very unclear exactly what the status of such an activity be. In the Orthodox community nowadays, it would be frowned upon to do something like that, but is that even really aser derabanan? Because it has no shaychus to being any way leading up to relations, is extremely unclear what exactly would be going on. So you have the famous shaila that comes up more often, which is, as Ms. Hirsch pointed out, shaking hands. Let's say a member of the opposite gender extends a hand to you in greeting, let's say in business, are you allowed to shake the hand or not? So there are a few different approaches to this issue. Most extreme being that shaking the hand of a member of the opposite gender is yehoreg val yavor. You should be killed rather than violate this, because this is part of abizrayu, the gilu yarayos, that this is related to the, again, this prohibition of you're not allowed to come close to people that who are arayos at all. And therefore, if a man or woman, whatever opposite gender, extends their hand to you, so even if the person will be embarrassed or whatever, so better to be killed rather than take the hand. So therefore, you shouldn't obviously not do that. The other approach is, yes, it's Asur, but it's not Yehareg V'Yavor. The third approach, which is the one that is commonly accepted by most poskim, actually, probably, although the really right wing is sort of taking over nowadays, which is that it is allowed, that it's not Derech Hiba, shaking hands is not Derech Hiba, not Derech Taivas Bia, does not lead, nowadays it's a business greeting, it certainly does not lead anything more. The most it could possibly be is Derabanan, and even that's very questionable, whether that would even be fall under the category of Derabanan. So therefore, if a member of the opposite gender extends their hand to you in greeting, you may take it, but obviously you should not initiate a cross-gender handshake. But the really right wing is sort of taking over nowadays, and certainly if you go to Lakewood, even though there are many, quote-unquote, by poskim who are recognized even in the yeshivish world, they say that Rav Moshe Feinstein on a few occasions shook a woman's hand. They will probably not believe that story if you told it to them. And although I've heard Eidos from... Anyway, so they will probably not believe you. In the yeshivish world, it's very... They will not take a woman's hand at all. And that's, again... There's a story also about Rav Avadia Yosef, that this is a special situation where he received the Pras Yisrael, the Israel Prize, for his Sefer, his Tshuva Sefer Yabia Omer. So when they gave out the Pras Yisrael at the ceremony that year, so the prime minister was Golda Meir. So Golda Meir extended her hand to Rav Avadia as a congratulation. You know, he was walking down this stage, whatever, shaking hands with everyone who was awarding him the prize. So she extended her hand, and he didn't shake it, he just nodded in return. So first of all, I would agree that that is the correct thing to do in that situation, because it's obviously utterly, totally ridiculous that the female prime minister of a Jewish country would even think of extending her hand to the future chief rabbi. I don't think he was a chief rabbi then, but the future chief rabbi, a great leader of the Torah world, is obviously utterly ridiculous. And for him to accept her hand in a public manner would have been a shtickel chil Hashem for such a thing to happen in the Jewish state. So obviously that was in that situation. When there's something very public, or people are going to think something like that, so obviously that would be the proper course of events. But in general, in a private business meeting, if a member of the opposite gender extends their hand, so it is appropriate to it's okay to shake the hand in order to avoid embarrassment. But
worse, I was at a wedding of a black kiyaret, and she was sitting there with her mother by her side. And a tall black man came over and was going to extend it, or did extend his hand. I witnessed this. And the mother of the bride said, the bride does not shake hands with men. So he went over and kissed her.
But again, if it's somebody who should know better, then it's appropriate to teach a lesson, as opposed to it might happen over here. Let's say you have a non-from family members, and they're going to live with you for... And I'll live with you, obviously, but they're going to be in contact with you for years and years and years. So the first time you see them, say, after becoming from, let's say, you're Baal Shuva, so they're going to extend their hand, and you're going to take the hand to avoid embarrassing them. Then every time for the next 50 years that you see them, they're going to extend their hand. So it's proper to teach them right away that they're not supposed to do that. But
it's all in the tone of voice.
Of course, you have to do it very respectfully and politely. That's what that goes without saying. But again, if it's a one-time business thing, so it's not worth it. In general, we just recommend you should take it. So there's also a story that there was a delegation of rabbis from the Agudas Harabonim, the more right-wing rabbinical organization, which was very powerful in the beginning of the 20th century, but doesn't really exist so much anymore, that they went to, during World War II, they went to the White House to try to encourage FDR to... put more efforts into saving Jews.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't see them, as is well known. So apparently they got a consolation audience. There was one story where they got a consolation audience with, I think, the vice president. Anyway, at one point there was a story where they got a consolation audience with the first lady, Eleanor Roosevelt. So she walked into the meeting, and she extended her hand to these great rabbis. So they said to her, Madam First Lady, we're very sorry, but we're not allowed to touch women to whom we're not married. So she said, oh, that's nice. I wish my husband adhered to that rule.
Anyway. Is that apocryphal?
Whatever, it's a good story.
It's
so we have to.
Very good story.
Fine. So continuing over here, v'nichpal halav be'isur zeh. So basically, asur d'oraisa, potentially carrying it with the penalty of Malkus if you do something that's certainly Daraisa, if it's something that's like foreplay. Maybe, again, the status is a little bit unclear. Daraisa, Darabon, and when exactly it becomes Darabon, and when exactly it becomes Mutter, when you have touching that's far removed from something that could be have any sexual connotations. And but that, again, that's not Kares. None of these is Kares. The only thing that's Kares is the actual act of intercourse itself. Again, also, this is a different rule when it talks about the married couple during the time where the wife is in Nida, which we'll get to later. You should not do any of these abominations. These are the abomination of Hashem. We know the Sefer Chinuch's Shita that when you do something that's against the will of God, it's not that God changes his mind and doesn't like you anymore. It's more like an automatic thing. The way that God set up the laws of nature and the relationship between God and people is that if these laws are adhered to, then you have more of a divine presence resting on you. The less you adhere to them, it's an automatic thing that you cast off the divine presence. So if you start doing all these inappropriate things with Arayos, then you remove the divine protection from yourself. This means that it's an abomination of God. It doesn't mean that when God sees it, he goes, ew, that's disgusting, I don't like you anymore. That's not the way it works. It's just an automatic thing. So all these abominations, the people who were lived well in the land before you did, and I became disgusted with them. That these types of activities are really terrible, really disgusting, really should be denigrated. That anything that is an antithesis to the divine presence resting on the community, whether it be Jewish or otherwise, and again, we're going to see later that these laws apply to non-Jews as well. They're also not allowed to have relations with Arayos. Again, how far the Kareva aspect goes is not exactly clear for the B'nai Noach, but they're certainly not allowed to have relations with the Arayos. That Kol Alinyan Shamarnu, what does it mean? It's talking about, like we said, they removed, the people who did this in the land removed the divine protection from themselves automatically because they engaged in these abominations. So this is the explanation we're going to give to help you understand exactly what's going on over here to make it easier for human comprehension. So it's actually interesting because we have very unfortunate things nowadays that there's this tiny Christian church that received much more press than it really deserves, a very tiny, tiny sect. The Westboro Baptist Church that was... they do mamish crazy stuff. So one of their signs that they tend to protest is they say God hates gay people, for example, which is not correct. It's absolutely not correct at all. It's when it says God hates, again, according to what the Sefer Chinuch presents over here, and I think it's pretty understood. A, it's not the person, certainly. It's not the sinner. It's the activity, and it doesn't mean that God has the same visceral type of reaction that these people have towards what they perceive to be sins. But rather that it's simply one who does it and casts off the divine protection because they're doing something that's against the will of God. Beloshen Sifra, what does the Sifra say? The Halachic Medrash and Sefer Vayikra says, Kemaise Eretz Mitzrayim, you shouldn't do like the way of the land of Egypt, Kemaise Eretz Canaan, you shouldn't do like the ways of Eretz Canaan either. Yocholo Yivnu Binyonos Kemosam, so what does it mean? Could it possibly mean that they absorbed the Egyptian style of architecture when they were in Egypt, and they now say, ooh, let's go into the land of Israel, let's build buildings in the style of the Egyptians, because they were so pretty. No, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't build buildings in the Egyptian style. It means, Talmud Lomar, uvechukoseam lo seleichu. You can't go in things that were like chukim, that were like set activities that they used to do, that they used to do things that, again, were rules that didn't really make sense. What's we called chukim, that things that, even when we apply to the laws of the Torah, that means the laws that are not so comprehensible by human understanding. Same thing over there, that they were things that just didn't make sense, they were just things that they did. It means the things that they used to do, but they're quasi-laws, the way they ran society, so to speak, and not their styles of architecture. Visham ne'amar ma'ayu osin. What did the people used to do in Egypt and Canaan? Ha'ish no'se'ish. A man used to marry a man. V'isha no'se'is isha. And a woman used to marry a woman. V'isha nise'is ishnei anashim. And a man and a woman used to get married to two husbands.
Ripped out of the headlines.
Well, at least two out of the three are out of the current headlines, and the third, who knows how far off that is.
So wait, why was, when Avram went down to Mitzrayim, why did he was afraid that if they found out he was married to Sarah, that they would kill him and take her if they were allowed a woman to be married to two different husbands?
Well, they weren't allowed. That was the point. That's it said that was wow. That was is one of the toivos. This is one of these three things are the things that God doesn't like. That in other words, they weren't allowed. They used to do it anyway sometimes, but it could be A, that particular culture didn't, or B, it could be that was only when the woman wanted to marry two men. If Sarah wouldn't say, no, I like my current husband, thank you. Okay, bye, current husband. We're gonna have a new husband. So if he wasn't alive anymore, then she would have no excuse. So anyway, but that these three things are not allowed. So ish, again, also we have an idea that's found in the Gemara that it was a different level of sin rather than engaging in affairs. When in terms of ha'ish nos ish, ha'ish nos ish, that even homosexual trysts or relationships, that it was a different level that they're in the Dor HaMabul, that in the times of the flood, one of the reasons that the generation had to be wiped out and there was no hope for them is that kosin ksuba lizharim, that even though they considered it to be official and on the same level as a regular male-female marriage, and that was an additional level of sin that they used to do. So this was, again, this is
nothing
considered...
Nothing ever changes.
Right, nothing changes. That's why a lot of people are nervous about what's going on nowadays, that this may be an extra reason that perhaps the divine protection might be leaving America. Chas v'shalom, I hope it doesn't, but it's something to be concerned about. But there's also a point over here that Hira mentions female homosexual relationships, which are not mentioned specifically in the text of the Torah. They're only mentioned over here when it says Kemaisei Eretz Mitzrayim. You shouldn't do like Egypt and Canaan. That's why there's no specific penalty or specific prohibition against lesbianism. And the reason for that is, the Rishonim bring the reasoning that it doesn't involve penetrative intercourse. So that's why it's not considered to be on the same level as male homosexual relations. But the question is it still an Isser D'Oraisa or is it not an Isser D'Oraisa? Maybe it's we assume that it's part of the general Isser D'Oraisa of Mais Eretz Mitzrayim, you're not supposed to do these types of things, but there is no specific Isser D'Oraisa for it. But exactly what the status is, somewhere between D'Oraisa and D'Rabbanan, and we don't want to say it's just Isser D'Rabbanan is also that, that's just Isser D'Rabbanan, but it's somewhere along the spectrum, not exactly sure where. And in fact, the punishment if two women are witnessed, and of course have the hasra, the warning, whatever, engaging in a act of lesbian type of sex, is that it's makas mardus, that it's the rabbinic type of lashes, and not malkus, because there's no specific prohibition in the Torah for this. It's just subsumed under the general prohibition of kemais eretz mitzrayim lo sasu. And it's very interesting because there's no penetration involved, that a woman, although there is a different opinion about this in the Tanoim, but the way we paskin is that a woman who has engaged in the homosexual activity is still allowed to marry even a Kohen Gadol, because there's no penetration involved, so it doesn't violate her virginity, I guess, in any way. Fine. Mishorshe harchokas hazima. The post halacha also says that a man should be careful not to allow known lesbians to come visit his wife, and he shouldn't allow his wife to go visit known lesbians. So it's interesting.
Some of my best friends come
because they might be tempted to join in their activities. But again, it's certainly not anywhere near the prohibition of male homosexual relations, which will be dealt with in their own mitzvah in a few mitzvahs from now. Mishor she'achakas hazima. Why do we get rid of the, why do we want to make ourselves far away from these types of seedy activities? Kosavdi v'parshas vayishma yisro belav delo sinaf mashiyadati. That the last time we had a prohibited sexual relationship was when it says lo sinaf, you're not allowed to have relations with a married woman. That's found in the Ten Commandments. And we said over there that the reason is we want everybody to, we want people's lineage to be known. And again, if a woman would have relations with multiple men, so you never know who the father is of the child, whereas you always know who the mother is. So therefore, you want each woman to only have relations with one man. Whereas, again, a man can have multiple wives because
you know who the
father is and you know who the mother is, where it doesn't work the other way around. Also, he talks about over there in Parshas Yisro about how people get very jealous of people try to seduce their spouse or significant other. It says Bas Zug over there, I think. And where God wanted us for a betterment of society, that nobody should try to do these types of things because it would cause a breakdown of interpersonal relationships. Yeah. And other reasons, probably, you know, mystical reason. In terms of the Arayos, again, we're going to... V'zosa mitzvah gamkin, v'osu ha-shoreshu, this is for the same reason. Sh'nimnanu me'iskari v'ima erva shum korva. And not supposed to get close at all. Levish yadua ki ha-korva siba al gilui ha-erva. That closeness leads to actual relations. V'gilui erva yimatsu kama takolo zuchama hefseidim kemoshi kasafti sham. And when for inappropriate relationships, there are going to be lots of issues that come out of it, as we discussed over there. This is talking about a married woman. But so why does the Torah tell us that we're not allowed to have relations with close female relatives? I mean, talking about from a male perspective. From a female perspective, it's the opposite. Close male relatives. So that's not exactly clear from this line of reasoning. When we talk about the prohibition of having relations with one's mother, we're going to discuss a little bit about potential reasons for that, so you're going to have to sit tight till we get to that type of mitzvah. But we assume that all these types of things, there's some sort of... a lot of it is intuitive, that you're not supposed to be doing these things, so there must be some sort of mystical, I would say. I mean, maybe Sefer Chinuch is not going to like that terminology per se, but there's some sort of appeal to the human...
Condition
and the human intuition in a way that's not present perhaps in other mitzvos because there's a specific reason for it. But again, we're searching to find out why this, again, you might think there doesn't need to be a mitzvah because it's so disgusting, nobody would do it for most of them, not all of them. But again, we don't have all the reasons as to why there would be a specific prohibition over here. Midine ha-mitzvah, ma sha'asru chachomim zichronim livracha, bezeh ligeder. So we basically told you the general principle of what's going on over here. So then we have additional levels of prohibition that were tacked on by the sages. The who shelo yikrots adam biyadav veyirmos beinav lachas min harayos. You shouldn't playfully make gestures or winks to something like that. I don't know, to one of the suggestive type of, if you want. How?
I would think not.
Yeah, okay. To one of the arayos, b'shelo lischok imahem klal. You shouldn't laugh with them. Shouldn't play around with them. Again, presumably in a lightheaded way. I don't. We're looking at this for a little bit from a 21st century perspective. I admit, but it's, you know, I don't think this is the prohibition of if you're at a Shabbos table with lots of people, and there are obviously going to be perhaps married women there, and so there are men there who are not her husband, so she's not allowed to say anything humorous. I don't think that's what it means.
That's
I think it means that if you in a lightheaded sort of way, that might potentially lead to physical contact. You're not allowed to go and specifically try to smell a woman's perfume. V'shelo lahabid benoshim klal. Again, if she's walking by and you happen to smell it, so what can you do? But you're not supposed to, you know, go put your nose and detect the latest fragrance that she's wearing. V'shelo, even though, again, this doesn't involve touching. The raisa, the only issues would be things that involve touching. V'shelo lahabid benoshim klal. You should not look at women at all. And then gaze, not look. You're not supposed to gaze at them. in order to, you know, to derive pleasure from gazing at them or to stare intently. And in 21st century, excuse me for being modern, but I think making eye contact is okay. There are, you know, if you go to a Haredi community in Israel, so a lot of times men and women will not make eye contact with each other, but I think in America that's generally acceptable. You're just not allowed to stare at a woman, gaze intently. Afilu bifnei kala b'chavonas hana, even in the face of a bride, again with the intention of deriving pleasure. Now, why is he excluding over here a bride? You might think that a bride is worse.
You're supposed to, you know, say how beautiful
right.
a bride is.
Exactly, because you're supposed to do things that make the bride more beloved to her husband, more attractive to her husband. So if he sees that all the other men are staring at her, then he might think, "Ooh, I really got a good catch." But even so, even though your intention is sort of to try to make sure that her husband loves her more, still you're not supposed to gaze intently to derive pleasure even at a kala.
And what about pictures in magazines? Is that the...
Oh, so you see that the prohibition is not to look to ever see a woman, obviously. The prohibition is to gaze intently, so...
If you never saw
a woman... Anyway, so you're not allowed... Again, if you have a picture of a woman in a magazine, I mean, a kosher magazine with a fully dressed woman in it...
Kosher magazines don't have pictures of
them. Well, you have dargis nowadays. You have different levels. So we have all these things here coming out of the Haredi community, mostly in Israel... That they won't publish pictures of women, that they edit them out.
The ones in the United States.
I mean,
maybe. Won't even print.
Okay. I mean, I consider that to be nuts. I'm a modern. I know we don't like this term anymore, but what you formerly used to be considered to be modern Orthodox, I think it's crazy. But again, that's not halacha. You have to realize that that's communal standards. That if the community really decides to make their standard that they don't have any pictures of women, so no men could potentially have the possibility, that's their prerogative. I don't agree with it, but that's not halacha. According to halacha, if there's a picture of a woman in a magazine, again, you shouldn't be looking at magazines that have feature pictures of women not clothed, but you should, I mean, not, again, it's like walking down the street. You're not, sometimes you're going to see something. Again, you're supposed to try as much as possible to avoid looking at things you're not supposed to look at, but...
It's the lingerie ads in the regular magazine.
They should put a woman on a 100 shekel note and see what that, from they are.
Yeah, that's interesting. But that's not actual halacha, because really the halacha is you're not supposed to gaze with the intention to derive pleasure, but simply seeing a picture of a woman, again, as long as assuming she's in some sort of... dress, my normal type of dress, then that is okay. I would assume that seeing a picture of a woman in no dress, with zero clothing on in any type of publication, would even catching a glance would be lead to thoughts that we're not supposed to have, so we certainly should not be putting ourselves in a position where we should be seeing those types of images. Nevertheless, again, like I said, strictly speaking, to just simply see a picture of a woman in a magazine or a newspaper, if she's in a manner where it's not going to be an automatic cause of improper thoughts, then that would be okay. Like the picture of Hillary Clinton in the war room when they were getting Osama bin Laden, that was edited out of the Haredi pictures. Honestly, I don't think that, again, if you've never seen a woman before, and I mean, it's hard to imagine anyway, but it's a little bit hard to imagine that could cause inappropriate thoughts in anyone. But again, if you decide as your communal standard that you don't want pictures of women at all to avoid any, that's part of the prerogative. That's part of the prerogative. Now, v'afilu bet bektana shel also listakel. And not talking about even covered parts of the body, even at a little finger of a woman, you're not supposed to stare with the intention of deriving pleasure from looking at her finger. The Gemara says that, that's an interesting lesson, in Brachos it says that if you stare with the intention of getting pleasure at the woman's little finger, it's as if you stared at her genital area. So it's really just trying to emphasize the seriousness of the prohibition of staring to derive pleasure, even if it's in something that's absolutely under no obligation of a woman to cover, certainly in terms of the obligations of modest dress, and certainly a man can never avoid looking, seeing a woman's little finger at certain points, but the point is that you have to have control over your own method of looking, and you're not supposed to look with the intention specifically of deriving pleasure from it. Chutz, of course, may ishto shel adam, if your own wife, shemuter lahabit biofia, you're allowed to stare at your wife's beauty in order to derive pleasure whenever you want. Va'afilu be'oda nida. Even though she's an erva when she is an ida, you're allowed to look at her to derive pleasure even when she is in such a state. Why?
Mipnei shehi muteres lo la'achar zman. We have, when it comes to anida, so we have leniencies and stringencies. That, on the one hand, since you're so familiar with each other and you're going to be permitted to each other soon,
eventually,
then you have leniencies because you know that you have... You have what to look forward to. In other words, as opposed to a married woman where you're never allowed to be together as long as she remains married. But that's presumably going to be forever unless proven otherwise. But you also have more stringencies in to a certain sense with your wife when she's a nida because, again, you're so familiar that it's easier to get into a habit of, that you're going to be nichshal in actually having relations. So therefore, there are things that are prohibited with your wife when she's anita, they're not prohibited with other types of arayos, like handing things to each other, even if you're not touching. Like, if you're eating both of you at the same table, you're supposed to have something in between as a heker, so you won't eat together from the same plate, or you won't become eat into an intimate a manner. But these things are not technically applicable to other types of arayos, although there are. This is a minority view of some poskim that say you should adhere to these things. You shouldn't hand things to each other when, if you're talking about a married woman either. That's not generally accepted. Obviously, I don't recommend a romantic candlelit dinner with someone else's spouse. That's not appropriate either. But to eat at the same table without a heker is generally considered to be okay. Now, the chazaka b'Yisrael she yitzro maser b'yado b'chgon davar zeh shetoli b'zman. So you're going to be able to control yourself if it's only a temporary prohibition. Nevertheless, there is a limit to this idea that you'll be able to control your Yetzer Hara if it's only a temporary prohibition, which is that you're not allowed to, that really might take control of you if you start staring at places of her body that are normally covered. So therefore, you're allowed to stare to, even to derive pleasure, according to most poskim, at places on your wife's body that are normally uncovered, even when she's anida, places that are normally covered, you're not supposed to stare. It doesn't mention over here the prohibition of seeing. It seems to be that the simple understanding is that the only prohibition is specifically to stare at parts of your wife's body that are normally covered when she's anida, but she's allowed to, like, for example, if you're getting dressed in your corner of the room and she's getting dressed in her corner of the room and she's, getting undressed temporarily, she's just, like, changing clothes. So as long as you're not, even if you happen to see her out of the corner of your eye, then that would be okay. That's what it seems to be from here. She doesn't, for example, have to literally be covered up all the time. It would be a little bit difficult living in close quarters when she is anida. Just the prohibition is on the man that he's not allowed to gaze intently when she's not fully dressed. There are people where the wife does stay dressed the entire time or she goes to the bathroom to change or something during the time she's anida. But again, in our circles, it's not the normally accepted psak that he's allowed to, glance, or, if he happens to see, it's not a problem. He's just not allowed to stare.
I thought that men actually are supposed to get dressed in the bathroom or something like that. You're not supposed to go, wandering around without clothes on in your, in your house or something like that. I think originally, you're supposed to get dressed under the covers or something like that, but
Yeah, Mishnah Berurah has a very extreme interpretation of that halacha. That's true.
Well, maybe in Russia it was cold enough, so,
That's true, but technically, the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Yossi says that he said that he was very religious, and the corners of his house never saw the walls of his house never saw the corner of his garment. So what
the
is
corner of his garment?
Yeah. So what does it mean? He never got undressed when he was putting on one garment. He was taking off the other at the same time, so he never got fully undressed out in the open. But exactly what that means is a little bit unclear. A, he's talking about it as a midas chasidus. He says, I'm wonderful that I used to do this. This isn't necessarily a halacha that applies to everyone that they always have to do. And B, what does it mean that they never saw the corner of his garment? Does it mean that he didn't even take off his socks, outside of bed? But the Mishnah Berurah actually has such a thing that really you should take your socks on and off under the covers, because it's not normal to expose one's feet nowadays. Again, I told you it's a very extreme interpretation.
I did not see the corner of your garment.
Right, I'm explaining.
Your garment has corners.
So it's the other interpretation is that Rabbi Yossi was not talking about that he didn't get undressed at all. It meant that he didn't get totally undressed. He didn't take off his underwear. He didn't, maybe, according to some interpretations, the Aruch HaShulchan seems to have this way, that he didn't take off, he didn't get totally shirtless outside of bed. But it doesn't mean that he didn't take off any type of, he didn't start getting undressed at all outside of bed. And A, according to most poskim, this is not absolute halacha, there's only Midas Chasidus of Rabbi Yossi. So again, like I said, the Mishnah Berurah does have a very extreme interpretation that really you shouldn't expose outside of a covering, even when you're getting dressed and undressed, even a man, any type of any body part that he does that he normally covers.
By yourself, I mean, what's
even no, because it has to do with that you know, it's out of respect for God's presence or something.
Stuff.
Right, so it's also a machlokes, right? I wanted to say there are two halachos. One is the idea of getting completely undressed, and one is the idea of being dressed in a manner that's respectable, which is only if people are seeing you and nothing to do with God's presence. God's presence is only to be completely undressed. But again, all these things are not... Again, the Mishnah Berurah does have has an extreme interpretation, but these are not necessarily totally absolute halachos to get. You know, they're very yeshivish. You spend time in, like in Lakewood, and I was in yeshiva, so in the dorm, so most people used to, you know, get dressed under a robe or when they walk the shower. So, I mean, not everybody... I don't think that's really halachically required, but again, you have to do what's mikubal in your environment, but I don't think that's a real halacha. We could talk about...
The formulation is the same as with women's hair. That's just random, or the idea of the walls of your house don't see something. This is just a sort of...
That's also true. That's a very similar phrase found by Kimchis, who was the mother of seven sons who were all the Kohen Gadol. So they say, what did you do in order to be zocha, to merit the fact that you had so many children and became Kohen Gadol? She said, the beams of my house never saw my hair. That means that she had a midas chasidus, that she had a pious practice, that she kept her hair covered even at home when she was completely alone.
What did the beams of her house...
It was just personal modesty. It's not that they actually, obviously the inanimate objects didn't really care about seeing her or not. It's a matter of personal modesty, respect to God's presence, whatever.
I was going to say, isn't that the same idea? That because God is everywhere, that it's a respect for a sort of...
Right, but that's certainly only a midas chasidus for a woman to keep her covered. Strictly speaking, a woman only needs to cover her hair when she leaves her house, or according to normative halacha, when there are other men besides family members inside her house. So definitely, that's not a real halacha. However, the Zohar is very into it. Says that the woman has to cover every single strand of hair, even when she's at home. And if she doesn't, then it can cause all sorts of bad things to happen to her children. Anyway, it's a mystical approach to it. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe was very into this. That he said for this reason that he says that Davka specifically, even though there are poskim who don't allow shetels, obviously, he says Davka, a woman should wear a shetel, because it covers all of her hair, and she's never going to be embarrassed to be wearing it, because people will just think that if she's in work or something, or out in public, people just think she has her hair. Like, if, for example, if she wore a tichel or she wore a hat, and she walked in to have a meeting with the President of the United States, so it's not so business-like, it's not so professional to have be wearing a hat into one of these meetings, so she might be tempted to take it off. So if she wears a shetel, so she's going to cover every single strand of hair, she's going to never be tempted to take it off. That's why she should wear dafka shetel. That's why Chabad is very, very into shetels. They don't care how good it looks, they don't care. As long as you cover every single strand of natural hair, you're good. Well, the poskim don't agree with that. They say that's not the full halacha, that you have to be so makbeh that every single strand of hair has to be covered at all times. And that's why other poskim, even if they allow shetel, sometimes they prefer tichels, non-shetel hair coverings, because it doesn't look like hair. It looks like you're really covering your hair. And even if a little bit comes out, then that's better than wearing a shetel. Yeah? That's not the... You're conflating two things. That's... The Ramah said neither of these things.
No,
not per se. One is probably found in the Talmud Bavli, and one is found in Rav Moshe Feinstein. Very temporally different sources. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he goes through some very fancy logic, most of it original thoughts, where he feels that because hair is not as chomor, not as stringent as other covered parts of the body, because, as we see, unmarried women don't have to cover their hair, according to most opinions, and we don't treat it... See, she's allowed to uncover her hair in her own house, right, okay, so you have to have... In order for it to be a problem, it has to be that the head is what's called paruas. The head is uncovered. Since he said, so it's impossible to say that the head is uncovered, or the hair is uncovered, unless you have more than a tefach, which is the halachically, the reason where the tefach comes in, the hand breath, is that the way, if a woman, you're not supposed to say Kriya Shema or Daven or whatever in front of a woman who has a tefach uncovered of a part of, a, of her body that's usually covered. That's bidyevet. It doesn't mean that a woman's allowed to expose a tefach in an area that she's not supposed to, that she's supposed to cover. It means that if a part of it happens to be exposed, if her, just to give an example, if her collar happens to be open a little more than she normally has it by accident, and she, you know, you're saying Kriya Shema, so you're allowed to say, if there's less than a tefach, so you're allowed to say Kriya Shema. Nobody ever said that you're allowed to expose that amount lechatchila. So the Reb Moshe says, but since hair isn't as stringent, so you're allowed, since if you have at least that amount, so it's not considered to be uncovered, the hair in general to be an uncovered part of the body, so we don't have to be as stringent, and he feels that even lechatchila, a woman is allowed to uncover up to a tefach of her hair. Which is a chiddush. I mean, it's not really found in the earlier poskim. Mm-hmm. What we do find in the earlier poskim, we have a concept called Sa'ar Hayotze Chutz L'Tzamosa, which is already found in the Ravid. And we have to wait till next time to discuss it more. But we have a principle called, if a woman covers her hair and a little bit of hair sticks out, it's called Sa'ar Chutz L'Tzamosa. If she puts her tichel on and, you know, a little bit of hair happens to come out, she doesn't have to go into a mirror and go LCD like tucking every single strand of hair into the tichel. If she puts it on in a normal way and some comes out, so then that's okay, according to the Ravid quoted by the Rashba, quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, all these types of all the poskim pretty much bring, even there are some poskim that don't even like that. Okay, but that's the normative halacha is brought down. That Sarah Yotze Chutz Tzamasa is okay. So Reb Moshe is sort of extending the principle of Chutz Tzamasa even more. He says, which is one thing people don't know about Reb Moshe, that he thinks that maybe if she just like puts a cover on her head and stuff is hanging down, that's also Chutz Tzamasa. It doesn't even start with the applicability of Tefach. That people don't go, Reb Moshe saying, which he also says, that you're allowed to have unlimited amounts. Is dafka on the head itself, you're even allowed to have Tefach. So all these are huge, huge, huge chidushim, which many, many poskim, most other poskim, unless they just feel like, or Moshe is like Moshe Rabbeinu and you can't question him. So these are very, very big chidushim. In the normative poskim of earlier times, it was assumed that the only hair that was allowed to be uncovered is if you put your on your tichel in a normal way and some happen to be coming out. Not that you're allowed to leave huge swaths of hair specifically uncovered. Although, again, if you could be even more makel in theory, which maybe we'll discuss a little bit more next time, again, this is just giving you tantalizing introductions, it's possible you could be even more makel than nowadays that, again, women, since the only chiyuv that remains deraisa is that the head has to be covered, and you have to interpret what's the actual deraisa obligation of a married woman to cover her hair. So then, if that's the case, then maybe you could be even more makel there, Moshe. If it depends on the minhag hamakom, how much hair a woman is allowed to uncover in order to be allowed lechatchila. But again, most poskim assume that the Moshe's chiddush per se is not exactly it's a big chiddush. I mean, people say that the heter is a tefach. You're allowed up to a tefach, quoting Reb Moshe. They don't quote the thing about the hair hanging down, but they quote specifically, like in front, to have up to a tefach. And Chacham Avadi also passed in that way because that's what he thought chutz letzamasa meant. It's also very difficult. That's specific. There's no shiur given for the tefach for chutz letzamasa. So exactly how much hair?
That's a lot of hair.
Again, so if you, I would say that. So good. So limit it to Reb Moshe. If you want to be even, if there's a svara to say you could be even more makel if the minhag of the community is to uncover even more hair. So good. So limit it to Reb Moshe of tefach, even though according to the earlier poskim, that even the heter of tefach is not so oiskehalten, as we say in Yiddish, it's not so well established in terms of the halachic literature. That's a different problem also, because that's really, even if you have your head covered, even though Reb Moshe might say that's chutz letzamasa, that's pasha, that's really not correct, because that's when we say rosha parua, I mean the head is uncovered, So it means one of two things in Chazal. Either it means that the head has no covering on it, or it means that the hair is flowing loose on the shoulders, even if there is a head covering.
Yeah.
So that idea that there's unlimited hair, you know, hanging down is okay, is very, 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 very difficult. And again, the tefach, the heter of the tefach might not be a heter that should be relied upon as far as the tefach per se, but it's just in terms of the minhag of the community. But the basic halacha is probably more that really should try to cover all the hair, but if some sticks out, then it's okay.
Point was
this is such a huge sugya. I really did not even do it justice. Nothing I said really should be relied upon lemaisa that we discussed in the last few minutes, because it's such a huge sugya. It needs to be dealt with each case individually, and really have to learn all more about the background, which I really did not have time to discuss today. If you want to know more, actually, I have a shiur posted online that I gave as a chabura to the Yadin Yadin Kolol last year, which talks about the exact parameters of hair covering.